Coming up on this edition of Chippewa Valley This Week, a 5-4 Supreme Court decision on a Mississippi case overturns federal protection for abortion and throws it back to the states. Plus, our energy future, and Caleb Swenson talks with a longtime board member of Hope Village in Chippewa Falls from our parking lot picnic this past Thursday. It's all ahead on this edition of Chippewa Valley This Week, a public affairs program of WWIB and WOGO Radio. I'm Mark Halverson. A busy and full show begins with the Supreme Court's 5-4 decision in the Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization case from Mississippi, overturning federal abortion protection, and the landmark Roe versus Wade decision of January 1973 and sending abortion back to the states. We've got response from Democratic State Representative Jody Emerson, who Friday said, quote, "Like millions of Americans, I am heartbroken and furious today. With this unjust and unconscionable decision, the court crushes the sacred right to control one's own body and to choose for oneself whether and when to have children." Emerson continues, quote, "Today's ruling drags us back to a more dangerous and cruel time, a time when women had to put their lives at risk to seek illegal abortions, a time I hoped our country would never see again." Meanwhile, WEAU-TV reports more than 100 people turned out at an abortion rights rally outside the federal courthouse in downtown Eau Claire Friday night to protest the Supreme Court's decision. Diane Amtvedt, described as a retired practitioner who specialized in women's health, told WEAU-TV,
"This is so unjust. There is no law that affects the lives of men in the way that this is going to impact women. And it's also going to impact families and children."
Meanwhile, other reaction, Republican congressional candidate Derek Van Orden in the 3rd District saying, quote, "I believe that every child is a child of God, and today's decision is a major milestone for the sanctity of life." Also, Republican State Representative Rob Summerfield of the 67th Assembly District saying, quote, "Today's decision is a victory for life and for democracy. As the court made clear, the Constitution does not confer a right to an abortion, but leaves the issue to the people of the states," unquote. And finally, Republican gubernatorial candidate Rebecca Clayfish had a television ad ready to go, which she released Friday afternoon.
"I know life begins at conception and must be cherished and protected. After 50 years of our conservative activism, Roe v. Wade has finally been overturned. Now our fight to save unborn babies moves to Madison. We need a leader who will stand firm in this fight and never waver. As your governor, I will defend the sanctity of life always."
Meanwhile, Wisconsin's Democratic Attorney General Josh Call says he doesn't know that the 1849 abortion ban, the law on the books in the Badger State, is enforceable, and he's indicated he doesn't intend to enforce it. Our energy future is a subject that was recently tackled at an Eggs and Issues breakfast by the Eau Claire Chamber of Commerce. The Chamber's Vice President of Governmental Affairs, Scott Rogers, specifies some of the questions that they were looking to deal with.
How realistic are the long-term carbon neutral goals of utilities, governments, businesses? What's the future of renewable energy sources? Where do electric vehicles really fit into that? And what's the infrastructure and education needed to support all of those things? And then how do they affect us here in the business community in terms of energy use, conservation, and cost?
Xcel Energy's Regional Vice President of Rates and Regulatory, Carl Hosley, talked about his company's path to be carbon free by 2050.
"We were the first to have a comprehensive carbon strategy. In fact, I think it was, what, the end of 2018, too? Yeah, the end of 2018, we were the first ones to say, hey, listen, we're going to put out zero carbon by 2050. We have an interim goal of 80% by 2030. We just introduced a natural gas carbon goal. That's a 25% reduction in greenhouse gases by 2030 and net zero carbon by 2050. We're the first ones to have an electric vehicle vision out of the utilities. We have a vision of 1.5 million EVs in our system by 2030. Now, that's not in Wisconsin. That'd be amazing if it was, frankly. That's across all the 8 states. I think our mid goal for Wisconsin, something like 20 to 50,000 EV vehicles. So we're very progressive.
Hosley says Xcel's IRP, or Integrated Resource Plan,
is our process for planning what resources we need to have on the system to meet our load and to meet our carbon goals, right? The Integrated Resource Plan addresses those five states that I just mentioned where we share in all of our costs, the Dakotas, Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan. Our plan is to retire the last of our coal plants in the upper Midwest by 2030. We're not doing that early. We're doing that on the timeline that we've been planning for many, many years, right? Those coal plants are at the end of their useful life, and we're going to be replacing them probably with some renewables and also some natural gas because we have to fill those peaks and valleys, or excuse me, fill those valleys. We got 2,500 megs of solar energy coming online, as well as 2.1 megs of wind energy by 2032. And we're continuing our carbon-free nuclear units. Hey, we got a couple of great nuclear units. You know, I don't know how you feel about nuclear, but I personally love it. It's a great baseload generating. It's relatively cheap when you look at the fuel, since the plants are already built. If you had to build a new nuclear power plant, that would cost you an arm and a leg. You wouldn't want to do that. But we have great power plants now that are existing. They've been relicensed to run into the 2030s, 2040 timeframe. In fact, Florida Power and Light had the first nuclear power plant to actually be relicensed to run a full 80 years, which is fantastic. I think we will likely pursue something along those lines as well with our units.
City of Eau Claire senior planner Ned Noel was asked about the city's ambitious energy plans for the future and how they plan to get there.
So the city of Eau Claire adopted a 100% renewable energy goal by 2050, which is really the means to get to carbon neutrality by 2050 to uphold the Paris Agreement. So that was adopted as the second city in the state of Wisconsin after Madison in March of 2018. And this is the value set that the city has in terms of our elected officials, our strategic plan, and you see sustainability and equity are very important. And this is just an image that is part of our climate action plan that conveys a sustainable future, what it may look like in terms of more EVs on the road, more solar and wind. And the elected officials at the time when the former president got out of the Paris Agreement wanted to understand what the public thought, our residents. And so we had a survey conducted, and as you see here, about 75% of the public were in favor of strong, aggressive goals to be enacted for the city to work in partnership with our utility providers. And this is the climate action plan that shows about 900,000 metric tons of CO2 is released within the city limits. If you want to put that in perspective, that's like 900,000 hot air balloons being lifted up into the atmosphere from the city emissions every year. So it is quite a bit of contributions. But as you can see, one way that we're going to be able to get there is working with the utility providers. So their drop-down goals for carbon reductions are going to be key to make this advancement to meet the city goals. And how is the city doing currently? We receive an A- internationally from our climate perspective with our plans and our mitigation reduction strategies. A couple just, you know, what are we implementing in terms of projects? The city council pledged money towards resiliency, emergency shelter, and also clean energy at the Sonnentag Center. So a big project that the community can be proud of. We also, in partnership with Xcel, when they launched, I think this is the program that actually took over the solar generation, number one in the state. But when they launched this program, the first project was this old landfill that the city closed that we worked in partnership with Xcel to do this community solar garden. The city subscribes 100% offsets the swimming pool, Fairfax swimming pool. And I think school districts have subscribed, residents and businesses as well. So very successful program that Xcel launched. And also where it makes sense on city facilities, we add solar, fire station at the airport. We're looking at a microgrid study right now at our water treatment plant for resiliency in case there's power outages. We've already, for 40 plus years, we've used the waste generation biogas that comes off the sewage to be unitizing generators for power consumption. So we offset our utility bills that way. And more recently at the library here, we to get off of natural gas, we went geothermal. And right in the street, Eau Claire Street was closed, and we added geothermal, actually 500-foot deep wells to go down into the earth to utilize that energy that's stored within the earth. And the future is electric, as we've been talking about, whether it's buildings or vehicles. And so we're doubling down more on electric vehicles. We've added chargers, level twos in the Galloway ramp. And we're proud to note that soon we'll have a fast charger downtown across the street from the farmer's market. Eventually there'll be a solar canopy that helps power it, but we've been working with Xcel and a lot of other different partners here. to make that happen. And slowly we've been adding EVs to our fleet, whether it's just grounds maintenance for lawnmowers or also just vehicles as well. And we anticipate soon, in a couple of years, we'll add EV buses, electric vehicle buses. The first things first is that we need to get the electrical infrastructure and storage for these buses done first before we actually buy them. So trying to be wise about those investments.
As for the question on many people's mind, Eau Claire Energy Cooperative CEO Monica Obricki answers, where are we going with electric vehicles and what are some of the challenges to making them a bigger part of our transportation?
We see adoption of electric vehicles being a very significant part of the future of our energy cooperative. A few challenges that I think are prohibiting the adoption of them are range anxiety, right? Like, are there charging stations available for people to travel? And also, we know that most people will charge at their home, right? They're going to do most of their charging in their garage overnight. So developing rates and programs that meet the needs of our members so that they are incentivized to do that charging off peak or overnight. So it's beneficial for all of us if they use the energy during a time when it's cost the least. So we're working on that. I also think that it's a challenge in the Midwest that the makes and models aren't out there yet that are conducive to the Midwest living. You know, people like pickup trucks and SUVs. A lot of the electric vehicles are smaller sedans. So I think we'll see adoption continue to rise as more makes and models come online. And then I just want to say a few things that Eau Claire Energy has done. We have put in partnership with Dairyland, level 2 chargers at some key locations in our community. The Residence Inn Hotel, the Fairfield Inn Hotel, Metropolis is coming this spring, Beaver Creek Reserve. So that's a place where people will spend a significant amount of time. So level 2 charging makes sense. And then coming this summer is the Stony Creek Campground in Osseo. So we're trying to do our part to eliminate that range anxiety piece, as well as develop rates and programs that really work with our members. And that's a win-win for both the utility and the member.
Again, Eau Claire Energy Cooperative CEO Monica Obricki at a recent Eau Claire Chamber of Commerce Eggs and Issues on our energy future. Finally, at our first of 4 parking lot picnics this past Thursday at WWIB and WOGO, our Caleb Swenson talked with the retired former executive director at the Chippewa County Housing Authority and longtime board member of Hope Village, Ruth Rosenau, as we were raising funds through tips and donations on Thursday and matching donations from Marquardt Motors and Hawk Electric for the Hope Village and their tiny houses.
Ruth, welcome, and so glad to have you guys here.
Thanks, Caleb.
Now, you've been with Hope Village from the very beginning, from the get-go. You're a board member right now, but from the inception of this, and I believe it came out of the fact that Chippewa County did not have any facility for the homeless. I think the last one closed about 8 years ago, I believe. And I know Mike Cahoon, the director, had this vision that we need to be able to do something for the unsheltered in our community.
That's right. Bunch of agencies from the community got together and said we have to do something to help people who are unsheltered and at risk in the elements, looking for housing. Affordable housing is really an issue. It's been a long time in Chippewa County. Rents are high and they don't match some of the incomes, starting incomes that people have. So it's been a challenge.
And when you look at what Hope Village does and what you, Lord willing, are going to do in years to come, again, it's tiny homes, and these originally started out being built, constructed by community members and put on trailers and then housed and set up, so to speak, at local churches. But now there's actual property purchased. Tell me about that and how Hope Village is turning into, again, this original dream that seemed a long way off but now is getting closer and closer.
When we started, it seemed like it was a long ways off, but we've made tremendous progress. We now have 10 tiny houses, and another is under construction. We have been able to purchase land, and part of the land had a building on it that's being renovated to be used as a community center. We're hoping, our plan is to move all of the tiny houses to one location so that people have access to showers and bathrooms and a little larger kitchen cooking facility, and also storm shelter for tornadoes and bad weather. So the community center will be done by the end of this summer, and the infrastructure will be in place for moving the tiny houses. So we hope that they will all be on site by the end of October.
And finally, again, there is a capital campaign going on right now. We're asking people, hey, if you're able to give a generous tip or free will donation today here, you can give it in cash. If you don't have that on you, hopevillagechippewafalls.org. We've got QR codes all around that take you right there too. What are the needs financially to move the ministry to that next phase?
One of our goals is that the organization will become self-sufficient financially so that we don't have to rely on writing grants and worrying about funding. And one of the things, ways that we'll do that is by having affordable housing units. Chippewa County has a shortage of affordable housing units, and so our goal is to build 28 affordable housing units that will be located on the same site where our tiny houses are. And that will be able to be a transition for people moving from tiny houses into the affordable housing, but they'll also be available to other community members who are struggling to meet their rent or finding affordable apartments. The rents from those apartments will help to support the services that we provide to the guests in our tiny houses. Help to pay the director's salary and the support that people need in making the transition from being homeless to being able to maintain housing.
And again, being productive and members of our community as well, too. And this whole thing starts with loving others, loving what in some cases might seem to be the least of these folks who are kind of down and out, and saying you have value as a person, as an image bearer of God. You have value, and we want to give you a safe place to call home. And so many of these, I think you've probably seen, Ruth, give back when they get back on their feet.
And many of our guests become volunteers and volunteer during their stay in the tiny house. They volunteer in other ways to help us with fundraising events or cleaning and prep a tiny house that someone has moved out of and preparing it for the next person, helping care for the lawn at the community center now and our land. Yes, all of our guests are invited and encouraged to participate in returning.
Well, thank you so much, Ruth Rosenau.
Our Caleb Swenson with Ruth Rosenau with Hope Village in Chippewa Falls, the tiny houses from the start after her many years with the Chippewa Housing Authority. Again, recapping this edition of Chippewa Valley This Week, we began with reaction to the Supreme Court decision on Friday, 5-4 in the Mississippi case, overturning federal protection for abortion, then throwing it to the states. We also heard several of the panelists from the recent Eau Claire Chamber of Commerce Eggs and Issues Breakfast dealing with our energy future. And finally finishing up, as we mentioned, Caleb Swenson with Ruth Rosenau from the Hope Village Board from our parking lot picnic this past Thursday. Thanks so much for listening to this edition of Chippewa Valley This Week, a public affairs program of WWIB and WOGL Radio. I'm Mark Howerson.